Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Larry Pinkney. Larry's been on before for listeners who are unfamiliar with him. He's a dedicated activist. He's a former political prisoner. He's a Black Panther Party veteran. He's formerly served as Republican of New Africa, Minister of Interior. He's currently a board member of the Black Commentator. We want to talk about major world and national issues. We've done it before with Larry on this program. We'll cover major ones. We'll cover important ones. Larry, let me just begin by making a comment about today. Today was the inauguration, the swearing in of Iran's new president, Hassan Rouhani. I wrote about him before the election. I wrote about him after the June 14th election. He's a very distinguished man. He certainly isn't treated that way by the West or by Israel. He combines diplomacy, politics, and scholarship. He's a distinguished scholar. He's called the Diplomat Sheikh. He's written many books, many articles, many papers. I believe they're published in Farsi, in Arabic, and in English. I confess I haven't read his writings, but I have to do it. I have to do it, to quote directly from some of the things that he said. Well, he's been a part of the Iranian government throughout the post-1979 period. He's held many high-level posts. He was elected decisively. Nearly everyone predicted a runoff election. There were, I believe, seven candidates running. I think there were eight, if I recall, and I believe one or maybe two dropped out. So there were six or seven that stood for election. It looked like a runoff would take place for certain. But he won a majority. He was about 51% of the vote. So he did better than most people expected. He's got a very, very rough road ahead, very great challenges, multiple rounds of illegal sanctions. I stress illegal, because they really don't target the governments as much as they target the Iranian people. And international law is very clear on this. You cannot do this. And when you do, you're breaking the law. And that's exactly what these sanctions are. The Israeli lobby, Israel, Washington, they bear full responsibility for what's going on. He's got to deal with this. The issue of Iran's nuclear program, I've written many articles on it. It is absolutely legitimate. There isn't a shred of evidence that doesn't say it in no way does not comply with NPT, Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty provisions. It absolutely does. Again, I repeat, there's not a shred of evidence to suggest otherwise. 16 U.S. intelligence agencies say the same thing every single year. So it's no secret. It's call it an open secret. Everybody in Washington of importance, everybody in Israel, everybody in Western Europe, they know this, and yet they assail Iran repeatedly on its nuclear program irresponsibly. He's got to deal with this. The issue is not the nuclear program. The issue is an independent sovereign state. America targets every independent, non-pro-Western, independent sovereign state for regime change. Any pretext is used to do it. You know the way the dirty game goes. Weapons of mass destruction against Iraq. Saddam feeding Prozac. No, not Prozac. what's the sex stimulant? I forget the name of the thing. What do people take when they have, dare I say, erectile dysfunction? What do they take for that?
Oh, Viagra?
Viagra, that's right, not Prozac. You take Prozac to calm yourself down. You take Viagra to hype yourself up. Well, false stories were circulating about Gaddafi feeding his soldiers a Viagra so they could go out and rape Libyan women. Well, it was a crock. And even Amnesty International repeated this big lie over and over again. There wasn't a shred of truth to any of this. There were other lies against Gaddafi. There were all kinds of lies circulating about Syria and the Syrian government. This is the way the dirty game is played by the West and Israel, and of course the Israeli lobby that has so much power in America. Anyway, today was Rouhani's inauguration day. I was very honored, Larry. Press TV has me on often, and they had me on earlier in the week making a comment about Edward Snowden. And this morning they invited me on live during the inauguration. I would have been on for some time, but they had to interrupt me because one of the Iranian officials, came on to make a speech that might have been a fairly long one. So I listened for a little bit. It was in translation. I listened for a little bit, and then they said, "We don't want to keep you hanging. We don't know when this is going to end." So they let me cut off. But I might have been on for about 30 minutes if they hadn't done that. But I was able to make some comments about Iran and what's going on and the challenges that Rouhani faces going forward. I really felt honored to be able to do it. I repeated some of what I just said now, that really he faces very, very harsh sanctions and false accusations, and he has a very, very tough job ahead of him. He's got Iranian people that really deserve better than they're getting, not because the government doesn't want to provide it, but because of the sanctions that come down so hard on the Iranian people. Anyway, my congratulations today to Iran's new president. Before today, I called him president-elect. Now I call him President Rouhani, and I congratulate the Iranian people, and I wish them my best.
Indeed. I too would like to say the same thing, and do say the same thing. My congratulations, and I have to concur with you, Steve, that in fact this is going to be a very, very hard and difficult road to they're going to be challenged. And when I say they, I'm talking about not only President Rouhani, but the Iranian people. And they're going to be challenged by the continuation of the same kind of lies, distortions, omissions, etc., that emanate from none other than the U.S. government, the Israeli lobby, I prefer to say the Zionist lobby, apartheid Zionists, and from, of course, none other than the corporate stream media.
Well, it's so true, Larry. It is so true, and it is so despicable and irresponsible. I know the dirty game because I write about it so often. I don't know how many articles I've written about Iran and Syria combined. I'll bet those two countries, in the years that I've been writing, if I've written one article, I've written 100. It may be 200, I have no idea, but I write constantly on these things, and I focus scrupulously on trying to get my facts right and explain them responsibly to readers. And there's no question that the power of the Israeli lobby influencing the U.S. Congress, not 100% of the Congress, but damn close, and the power of Israel in the United States to influence U.S. policy, especially in the Middle East, it is a terrible, terrible situation for any independent government. That is the quote-unquote sin of countries like Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan, Syria, Iran. Aside from what type of government they have, the quote-unquote sin is that they value their sovereign independence about being a pro-Western satrap, a puppet state, taking orders from Washington, giving up their sovereignty to do it. They refuse to do it. They find America targeting them. It often results in war. Millions have died. Look at the post-9/11 period, Larry. Millions literally have died. We talked about this on the program Friday, where so many of the people die by nonviolent events in Afghanistan, a terribly, terribly persecuted country for now. 13 years in September, just America's wars, plus all of the deprivation and hardship that went on decades before that. You could go back many, many decades, the 1990s, the 1980s, the pre-1980s, go back a century, the great game that was played. John Pilger calls the Afghan people maybe the most long-suffering people in the world. I'd nominate the Haitians. It's been going on for them for about 500 years. And, of course, Native Americans, about 500 years. Well, Haitians, well, the Haitians today are not the Native Americans. They were wiped out, as you know, Larry, down to nearly the last man, woman, and child. That's what happened to the original Haitians. What was Haiti called back in those days? Oh, I forget.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I forget that Haiti wasn't called Haiti 500 years ago when Columbus came over. Oh, I know the name so well, and I can't think of it. But they were native people, just like the native people in the rest of the Americas, and Columbus and the people who came after him literally slaughtered them down to virtually the last man, woman, and child. That's the Western legacy. So it began hundreds of years ago, Larry, and it never stopped.
Exactly, and that's something. Oh, by the way, while I remember it, I want to convey to you and to the audience, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on the program, the show again. I really appreciate it. I want to convey very, very warm greetings, Stephen, to you and to the audience from Phil Restino, who, you know, is the co-chair of the Central Florida chapter of Veterans for Peace. And I told him I would definitely do that. He's working very hard. He has enormous respect for your writing, which you have been doing for so very long. Getting back to Iran.
Larry, I really appreciate that comment. It means a great deal to me. I do everything as a volunteer, and the only thing that matters to me is if somehow I'm able to reach people, and it has an effect, and they appreciate it, even to a modest extent. So I'm very grateful for those comments.
Well, he certainly meant it when he found out that you and I would be speaking today. He said, please make sure that you give my greetings to the brother. And I said, you can bet on it. So I've done that. But I want to say that so few people in this nation, in the United States, are cognizant, if you will, of the legacy that you have just done such an incredibly thorough job of explaining. And the legacy continues, it is and continues to be one of deceit and destruction. This is all we get. Deceit, lie, more destruction, perpetual wars, economic blood-sucking, all by supposedly our own government. I say supposedly because obviously it's not our own government. It's owned by the corporations who make enormous profit from these bloody wars. I also want to mention, that speaking of Iran, we need to remember Iran back in the 1950s and what happened, how the democratically elected president was overthrown by the United States Central Intelligence Agency, working, of course, with British intelligence, and one can only imagine that the Israelis were also deeply involved. And so, we have to understand that we are the only ones, and I say we, I'm talking about everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. We, the people, are the only ones who can change this hysteria, who can change continuation of this bloodletting and bloodsucking, both bloodletting and bloodsucking on the part of this corporate-owned U.S. government. So having said that, I'll shut up for a minute and give you the go.
Well, there's so much going on, Larry. I'm working on two articles for tomorrow, and if I have the time, I'd like to get out a short article on Rouhani's inauguration today. I don't think I need to make it a very detailed, long article, but just I'd like to pay my respects, and I'd like to do it in an article, and I'd like to do it to a fairly good extent in his own words, because he gave a speech. He spoke on Friday. Friday was Quds Day. Quds Day commemorates Israeli Jerusalem, the fact that Palestinians are denied the right to this universally recognized international city, and Israel claims it as its exclusive capital. It's expropriating virtually all the land, piece by piece by piece, or as they would say, dunum by dunum by dunum. Forget a dunum. Oh, forget how many acres to a dunum. Well, anyway, taking it chunk by chunk, you could say it any way you want to say it, stealing the land. Before 1967 June, Israel occupied West Jerusalem beginning in 1948. The culmination in May 1948. In June, 6 days in June 1967, it occupied East Jerusalem. And Israel claims the entire city, its exclusive capital. In 1946, the UN declared Jerusalem an international city. Even America has its embassy in Tel Aviv, not Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing mm-hmm. that happens. One of these days it's going to change. But in all these years, America has never set up an embassy in Jerusalem. It doesn't do very much responsibly, Larry. But that's one small thing that it felt maybe that was a line just too much to cross. So the lines have not been crossed yet. But I must say, John Kerry, and I quoted him, America's Secretary of State, some years ago said America should have its embassy in Jerusalem, not Tel Aviv. John Kerry, the peacemaker.
The so-called peacemaker, indeed, indeed. Well, I think that the more we pay attention, to this John Kerry person, you know, there's actually very little difference, if any, between him and Dick Cheney, frankly. They spout the same things, they do the same things, and, you know, I call them Republicrats. The bottom line is they serve the interests, you know, of the power elite, not of the everyday ordinary folks. So here or anywhere else, in this country or anywhere else. But yes, it is very interesting that there is some kind of at least recognition, if you will, of the fact that Jerusalem is in fact an international city. And the very cheek, as the British would say, the unmitigated cheek, the audacity of Israel to declare that this is exclusively theirs is almost beyond belief. But then most of what the state of Israel does these days and for decades is almost beyond belief.
Well, it really is. And again, as you know, Larry, so-called peace talks have been kicked off again. They began in Washington last Tuesday, so we're 5 days past that now. They'll resume again, I believe it's the week after this coming week. We're in the new week now, so I believe it will be next week. Possibly the date is a little bit fluid, but I've got a new article on the peace process going out tomorrow. Since leading up to what began on Tuesday in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think I've written about 8 articles on it. There is no question what's going on. I've discussed it briefly on this program, but I'll say it again very briefly. The peace talks are absolutely fake. They're a charade. Peace talks have been intermittent, ongoing, on and off for 40 years. 40 years, not a single thing has been accomplished to help them, to help the Palestinians. Absolutely dead zero. Does anyone with a modicum of intelligence actually think there's a chance that this time is different? Is anyone that silly, that stupid, that out of touch to imagine something as preposterous as that? The chance for a responsible resolution of longstanding, unresolved major issues is absolutely dead zero, with capital letters. Everybody in the know understands that. Fools and liars claim otherwise. Responsible independent analysts just dispense with all the pretense. And I've quoted a number of them. I quote a couple more in my article for tomorrow, including human rights activists. They understand the situation. They've followed it for years. It's a despicable situation. And look at the lineup going into the peace talks. Palestine's legitimate government, its democratically elected government, if you can imagine this, it doesn't even rise to the level of a bad Hollywood plot or script. The democratically elected government is excluded from the talks. They're not even invited.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have talks when one side isn't even invited to participate? Who's representing them? Long-time Palestinian-Israeli collaborators who sold out decades ago for very, very nice benefits they derived. Mahmoud Abbas, the coup d'etat president. He's a multimillionaire. He's extraordinarily rich. He's got who knows how much money. I've seen different figures. It's an enormous amount stashed in foreign tax havens. He betrays his people every day of the week. Israel rigged his election. His term expired in January 2009. He refuses to call new elections. I'm certain that Israel doesn't want him to call new elections. He's getting old. He's just about my age, about 79. I don't know how much longer he wants to hang on. If I had his I wouldn't have his millions. No use even speculating about that. But if I did have that kind of money, I'd use it responsibly. I certainly wouldn't steal more, and I wouldn't betray my own people. But that's what he's done every day in office, every day going back decades. He was the chief negotiator at Oslo that led up to that despicable agreement in 1993. It was a Palestinian Versailles. It was unconditional surrender. The only thing the Palestinians got, Larry, was the right to be Israel's enforcer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, to me, when we refer to, for example, peace talks, well, I spell it P-I-E-C-E, not P-E-A-C-E, because it's, you remember in the 40s, actually it was the late 30s, 1939 or thereabouts, when the quote-unquote Führer of Germany, Adolf Hitler, went to the League of Nations, and he said, Nazi Germany wants peace. We want a piece of Poland, a piece of Hungary, a piece of Czechoslovakia. And everybody just laughed. They thought it was so funny. The next day, the German Luftwaffe began bombing Poland. Okay, so it's peace, but they spell it differently, P-I-E-C-E. And the Israelis, along with the always complicity of the United States, which is almost, again, beyond belief, because we, the people of this country, do not even control our own government. We do not even set our own policies. It's just despicable. It's outrageous. But we've got to understand that what is happening to the Palestinian people, and I call it what it is, it's apartheid. It's apartheid. It's no different. In fact, in some respects, it's even worse than the apartheid in South Africa. And the Israeli Zionists are doing precisely the same thing. And oh, by the way, they did support, i.e., the Israelis did support the apartheid government of South Africa, which a lot of people have conveniently forgotten.
Oh, that's so true, and it's absolutely worse than South Africa. And I don't say that. Benjamin Tutu, Archbishop Tutu, has said that he lived through the apartheid period. He knows exactly the way things went on. Independent observers like him lived through the apartheid period, and they made the same statement that the way Israel treats Palestinians is worse than the worst offenses of the apartheid period that went on for decades. That's how bad things are in occupied Palestine, where literally Palestinians have no rights. And while these so-called talks are ongoing, Larry, viciousness attacks Palestinians on a daily basis. I included samples of that in my article for tomorrow, where last week alone, the week ending July 31st, let me put it that way, the seven-day period ending July 31st, Israel made 51 lawless incursions into Palestinian West Bank communities. Pre-dawn raids terrorized innocent families. Husbands were arrested. Children were arrested. And about 26 Palestinians were arrested. 8 children were arrested. All nonviolent. All committed no crimes of any sort. But this goes on all the time. I've cited periods in past articles where as many as 90 incursions occurred in a single week. Again, pre-dawn raids terrorizing Palestinian civilians. This stuff goes on every single day of the week, including while peace talks are ongoing. In fact, peace talks give Israel cover to do even more than they would do otherwise, because they distract, they divert people's attention from these other atrocities going on, so they simply don't pay attention. There's no coverage of this in the major media, and incredible suffering results. And this has gone on decade after decade after decade, no end in sight. And you call a peace process legitimate? Not at all.
No, Not at all. And the fact is that, and I keep trying to draw people's attention or call people's attention to this fact, you're absolutely correct. The so-called peace talks are nothing more than a distraction. It's nothing more than a distraction. So, in fact, during these so-called peace talks over the decades, as you just said, the outrages of Israel have intensified during those periods of time. It's bad enough. In fact, it's horrible. It's horrific on its own, standing alone every single day. But during peace talks, it's even worse, or so-called peace talks. And, you know, we need to understand, the people in this country, that there's blood on our hands. There is blood on our hands. And how long, I ask the question, how long? When are we ever going to learn? You know, we have to understand and take responsibility to stop this. We've got, you know, who I call drone men, kill lists, NSA, NDAA signing, NSA spying, Barack Obama sitting in the quote-unquote White House, carrying on precisely the same policies of his predecessors. In fact, even worse, you know, when Bush was in, it was hard to imagine that it could get worse. Well, it has gotten worse on Drone Man. And we have to understand that the people in this nation and throughout the world, but in this nation, we need to understand that we are responsible for these things. And until we take control of the government that's supposed to be up for and by the people, until we do that, these horrors are not only going to continue, but guess what? They're going to hit us right here at home. And that's precisely what the Obamatrons, the Republicrats, Democrats and Republicans, that's what they want, because then they use that to justify more repression, more spying, more intrusions against the American people and people around the world. So, having said that, I always want people to remember that we are not helpless. We are not helpless. Turn off that damn CBS, ABC, PBS, Fox News nonsense, because all it is vomit that's being regurgitated by the corporate stream media, who are in fact acting as the propaganda arm for the Democrats and Republicans. And I remember what the words of W.E.B. Du Bois. I always remember this when Du Bois said, quite frankly, in fact, I quoted in my latest article, the article's entitled Hatred, Division, and Perpetual Wars. When will we ever learn? Anyway, Du Bois said, quote, "The two parties have combined against us, to nullify our power by a gentleman's agreement of non-recognition, no matter how we vote." And then he says, "May God write us down as asses if ever again we're found putting our trust in either the Republican or Democratic parties." End of quote. My point being that, you know, this was written many decades ago by W.E.B. Du Bois. But the fact is we still haven't learned. Some of us are learning. We are beginning, I believe, to get to form a critical mass in this country, which is excellent, but we've got to intensify. When we speak of Palestine, when we think of Libya, etc., when we think of Bahrain, Yemen, we are responsible.
We sure are responsible, Larry. There's no question. And it's so easy for people able to get online and spend a small amount of time to know the truth, to be able to separate fiction from facts, to get it right, and tell other people, spread the good word instead of the bad word.
Right.
Larry, we've gone through half the program. I thought we were about 10 minutes into the hour. My God, the time goes by so fast. We need to take a short break. We'll do it. We'll come right back, Larry.
Great.
Welcome back, talking with Larry Pinkney. Larry, there's so much going on overseas in America. What's been on your mind most? I don't want to pick all of the topics, but I'm sure we're thinking about the same things. Dare I suggest? Let me let you dare suggest instead of I dare suggest.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on your show. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Larry, it's a great honor for me to have you on because you are so forthright in your views and honesty and honor. You're exactly the kind of person that listens to this program needs to hear because they get it straight. They get told the things that they really need to hear and what they really need to know.
Thank you so much. And what's on my mind are so much is on my mind. But in this case, I'm also thinking about Private Bradley Manning. I'm thinking about Lynn Stewart. I'm thinking about Leonard Peltier. I'm thinking about Mumia Abu-Jamal. I'm thinking about the thousands of political prisoners that are really languishing in the U.S. gulag called the prison system. I'm thinking about the horror that's going on right now as we speak in Guantanamo and continues. I'm thinking about these things, and I'm saying, you know what? It is time for us to reach a critical mass. We everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people had better do it, and we better understand that at stake, literally, what is at stake is everything on this, not only in this nation, but for Mother Earth. We have a group of banditos who run the so-called government, who control the government, who lie. They couldn't tell the truth if they wanted to, which is highly doubtful that they'd even want to, but they couldn't tell the truth and certainly will not to the American people or people anywhere in this world. We have to be our own media. We have to be the ones to communicate directly with each other. And like you said, Stephen, the fact is that people can go on the Internet and do some research. It doesn't take that long, for crying out loud. Do some research. Go to different sources. Wake up and find out what's happening and find out that you can actually do something about it locally, nationally, and globally. We can do something about it, but first we must awaken ourselves and each other.
Oh, do we ever, Larry? Do we ever? And I reflect back on the many years that I've been around, and I've never been more concerned about what I see now. There were so many problems in the past. I can't think of a time in my life when there wasn't something awful going on, including an awful lot of scary stuff. I'm certainly old enough to remember World War II, indeed Korea and Vietnam and everything that followed. But there's nothing that approaches the dangers that I see now, that literally there's a possibility that things could explode into another world war. If people think that's just a crazy thing to say, it's not crazy.
It's crazy not to say it.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Exactly. I mean, we've got people nuclear armed and dangerous, America, Israel, some of the rogue partners in Western Europe, Britain, France. I mean, these people look at nuclear weapons like king-sized hand grenades. That's the way they feel about them. And they're using nuclear weapons. They're using depleted uranium, and studies have shown that Israel, in its wars on Gaza and Lebanon, used enriched uranium. There's not a shred of doubt in my mind that America in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, maybe in Syria, have also used enriched uranium weapons. You won't hear this, but you discover them later when cancer epidemics break out. Iraq alone is absolutely plagued with a cancer and birth defect epidemic. Vast parts of the country. I mean, unprecedented stuff. It's got to be hitting Afghanistan. I mean, where's it going to hit next? I'm sure it's going to hit Libya. It's going to hit Syria. It's pretty awful stuff, Larry.
I was just looking at a documentary online about the consequences of the DU, the depleted uranium, as well as the enriched uranium that the United States used in Iraq specifically, and the horrors that are being suffered by people in terms of not only cancer, but the birth defects. Oh, my God. My only feeling as a human being. And for God's sake, can't we just reclaim our humanity? Isn't that what this struggle is all about? Reclaiming our humanity, taking it back from the monsters, and that's the nicest adjective I can use to describe them. Taking our humanity back from the monsters who are blood-sucking Mother Earth. And us, we are a part of Mother Earth. As I watched, Steve, as I watched that documentary, I mean, I was in tears and a rage. I'm saying, you know, how can we sit back? Not that all of us are, but we need more people to awaken and to accept their responsibility and then do something about it. Do something about it. We are not helpless. And you brought those images back to my mind when you said that.
Well, indeed, and it just stuns me, the dismissiveness of the great majority of American people, while wars of aggression led by America and Israel and key NATO partners and some of the worst Middle East despots allowed in this lawless enterprise, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Jordan, Turkey, despotic states, allied in wars and aggression against non-belligerent countries. In 2011, it was Libya. Since March 2011, it's been against Syria. Iran is in the target zone. If Syria gets defeated, I certainly hope it won't be, but if it does, the next battleground is Iran, and a battleground against Iran could literally mean a regional war, which could mean a global war, which could mean using nuclear weapons, which could mean God only knows what. Heaven help us all. And this is what's going on.
Yes, and it's something that we had better take the reins. We had better take the reins. We have got to understand that this is, I keep saying this, I say it, I reiterate it, this is literally everything is at stake. Stop thinking, as Howard Zinn pointed out, you know, look at the planet, look at Mother Earth as what it is. We are part of Mother Earth. We are part of her. We owe ourselves and each other the responsibility. We have to accept it and do something about it. When I think of the horrors that are going on, simultaneously, I also think about the fact that we can do something about it. We can. We don't have to sit back and be, oh, it's nothing I can do. It's a lot we can do. We have to be creative. As I always say in blackcommentator.com and in intrepidreport.com and all of my articles, I end by saying to my sisters and brothers, I say onward. I say that we must each one reach one, each one teach one. Onward then, my sisters and brothers. This is a long struggle, but we're at a point now where if we do not take the creative and appropriate actions, I'm not sure there'll be a planet much longer.
Well, I'm afraid there won't be a planet either, Larry, and there are so many ways to destroy it. You know, it can end in a mushroom-shaped cloud. It can end because of all the toxins that we dump in by the multi-tons, multi-thousands of tons every day. I mean, the Earth is just like a human body. It can only take so much before it expires. You keep pummeling it with incredible toxins. You make the entire surface, the air, the water, unfit for human consumption. It'll kill us. It's slowly killing us now. I mean, stuff that we eat and drink and breathe. Planet Earth wasn't intended to be this way, and hundreds of years ago it wasn't, but it certainly is. And if this is the legacy of modern-day science, then please, please transfer me back to the days when people acted more responsibly. But we're destroying things. It happens very slowly, but it certainly is happening. And if it doesn't happen environmentally by ecocide, it will happen certainly by war and with the kind of weapons we have. And I've quoted U.S. leaders like the founder of the U.S. nuclear Navy, Hyman Rickover, in testimony before Congress in the 1980s, he was very clear. Maybe he was a student of history, but he was very clear. And he said, in all the major wars, countries that go to war as they need to will use every weapon they have at their disposal to win. They may not use what they have if they don't need to win, but if they have to, they'll use everything they have. So if there's a real major conflict and it involves major powers that have and they have nuclear weapons on both sides, the chances of a nuclear war are very, very real. And I've written what nuclear expert Helen Caldicott says about a nuclear war and nuclear winter. Nuclear winter blocks out the sun for a very, very long period of time. And without sun, the planet dies, and so do we.
That's right. That's right. And Dr. Helen Caldicott was and continues to be, I have my heroes and sheroes, and definitely she is one of my sheroes. As a doctor, she knew exactly what she was talking about. And she explained it in simple, plain, everyday language that people, all of us, who didn't have to be rocket scientists to understand what Helen Caldicott was saying. And again, it goes back that we, you see, what concerns me, Steve, is that, brother, it has exacerbated the outrages that are going on in our nation and on our planet Mother Earth are being exacerbated by the thieves, by these bandits who call themselves our leaders. They're not our leaders. They are our enslavers. It is time to break free from this slavery, and I keep going back to the corporate stream media. These entities exist for one reason and one reason only, and that is to keep us propagandized, to keep us brainwashed, to keep us in a state of lethargy, where we're lethargic, okay? That's why I say turn off the damn television. You know, go on the internet, find out what's going on, connect with your neighbors, your brothers and your sisters, connect with them, come up with creative ideas. It starts right here in your neighborhood, in your household, in your block. It starts right here.
Boy, it sure does start right here. It absolutely starts right here. You mentioned the Bradley Manning. I wrote a number of times about him. Larry, I wrote about Edward Snowden, many articles on Edward Snowden. I wrote about Manning from the time his troubles began, and I wrote about him, maybe three or four times leading up to his trial, an absolute kangaroo court trial, guilty of 22 counts. He's guilty of nothing. He's guilty of absolutely nothing. They should put a medal on the guy. They should build a statue to the guy. Instead, they're going to put him away long term. He may go to prison for life. He was exonerated on the most serious charge, aiding the enemy. Well, they convicted him, I believe originally his original charges had six espionage charges included. I believe it was six. I thought the number eight sticks in my mind, but let's call it six. So let's say he was exonerated on one, so there's still five left. Espionage charges, 1917, World War One, Cold War relic has no relevance, zero relevance to what's going on today, and especially to Manning and the Snowden situation. Both of these guys are absolute heroes. They've both been nominated for Nobel Peace Prizes. Manning in 2013, Snowden in 2014. Of course, they don't win. Only war criminals win that prize, not peacemakers.
Right. That's right. And we need to understand that. I was just going to say that very point. We need to come up with the people's prize, a prize that comes from everyday ordinary people, because that's what counts. That other stuff really doesn't count. It's just a way to distract. And I believe strongly, that drone man Barack Obama continues, and it's obvious, he continues to lie because he doesn't represent us. He never has. His predecessors certainly did not, and nor does he. We have to understand that we have to take the mantle. We have to take the mantle. Justice delayed is justice denied. And, you know, if we keep delaying this justice, as I said, and I'll say it again, our planet of Mother Earth will die, and as you said, so will we. But it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. And when I think of people like Bradley Manning or Edward Snowden, and there are many others whose names are not generally known, who have shown the courage and the integrity to step up and say, you know what, I'm going to follow my conscience. I'm going to do the right thing, the human thing, the people thing. And this is what all of us have to do. Whatever level we can do it on, we better damn well start doing it right now.
Right now, indeed, and there's so much to do that's right. And if there's any country in the world, Larry, that is able to do the right thing politically, militarily, economically, it's America, the strongest country in the world militarily, the strongest politically, the strongest economically, and it uses all these attributes destructively instead of responsibly. While all the things that are going on that we've talked about, Larry, and so much more, Obama's got a new grand bargain he is putting up to the Republicans. What is his grand bargain? His grand bargain is taking from ordinary people and giving it to rich people. And how does
right.
he do it? He continues to approve Bush-era tax cuts for the rich and corporations. He wants to take low corporate taxes, nominally they're 35%, but they're not 39%. That's what they were. Oh, I forget the number. From 1989 to 2008, the real tax corporations paid, I believe the real number was something like 24%. So the nominal rate is 35. 1989 to 2008, they paid on average 24%. Obama wants to cut the nominal rate to 28%, maybe lower. The real rate the corporations have paid from 2008 through 2012 was about 12%. That's what they really pay. And there are companies like GE who occasionally have profit years in the billions of dollars, and they get a tax rebate. Now, how do you make billions of dollars and get a tax rebate? Anybody listening to this program who had income, taxable income, did they ever get a tax rebate? I doubt it. If they cheated, maybe they did. But if they paid things honestly, I'm sure they didn't. So if you cut the rate from 35 to 28 and they're paying 12%, then maybe their real rate will go down to 8%. And with all the clever lawyers and accountants they have, maybe they'll get it down to a much lower rate. Maybe it'll be 6%, 5%, and to the best of their ability, they'll whittle it down as close to zero as they can. And Obama goes along with this, and he actually believes that if you cut taxes for corporations, it'll trickle down and benefit ordinary people.
I got to say, Steve, and with all due respect to you, my dear brother, I don't even think Obama believes it. I believe that, you know, he knows exactly what he's doing. It reminds me of the days of Reaganomics, the trickle-down, so-called trickle-down theory. We've been there, done that. We know that that doesn't work. Even though when Obama, and this is what blew my mind about how people could have gotten on his bandwagon, this man praised, if people remember, back in 2007, 2008, he praised none other than Ronald Reagan. Excuse me, something is very rotten in Denmark, and I love Denmark, but I'm saying, euphemistically speaking, something is very wrong. So he's carrying out a 21st century style fascist agenda, and he's doing it, and we're allowing him to get away with it. The Republicans, the Democrats, they're two peas in a pod. They're the same. They're making deals with each other at the expense of everyday, ordinary black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. And that's got to stop. It's got to stop. We have got to come to our senses and say enough already. This we will not tolerate. You know, I think about the poem by Langston Hughes. The poem is entitled, "Let America Be America Again." And every time I read that poem, chills run through my body because he talks about what we could be in this country. It is time for us to stand up, to be what we can be. The Marines say, be all you can be. Well, I say, be all you can be. Be a human. Take back the planet. planet, take back our humanity. We can do that. We better do that.
Yeah, we really can do it, Larry, and I stress it all the time, and I cite from history when I say it, because it's happened before in America. It's happened around the world. It doesn't happen very often, but it happens, and sometimes very good things come up. Sometimes when you have revolutions, what you hope for doesn't happen. The French Revolution that happened just a short time after the American Revolution back in the 18th century, they got rid of the queen and let him eat cake and all that, but they got a terrible regime that came in, very bloodthirsty. So we got stories like Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, the best of times and the worst of times. So you never know what you're going to get when you throw out the old and you bring in the new. But things are so bad now and getting so much worse progressively that unless we really dismantle the system and start over again, I can't imagine it's going to be any worse than the way I see it going and the way it looks like it'll end up. Far, far worse than it is today with a complete police state. I mean, we have a police state now, but it'll be a complete mask-off police state, just like Boston was back in April.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of days.
That's right.
Well, I mean, literally, law and order was off the boards. It was martial law. It was police state justice, and the police literally had license to kill. And I don't know if they shot anybody. I don't remember reading anything about it. But they literally, if somebody disobeyed an order of the police, they literally could haul them out and shoot them on the spot, and nothing would have been done about it. That's how bad things were in Boston. What happened in Boston could come anywhere. It can come across America. And the worst part of it, Larry, is people will think there's such a terrible scare going on that, thank heavens, the government is stepping in responsibly and doing something about it. They'll actually buy into this, and that's exactly what happened in Boston, where the citizens of Boston, many of them, thanked the police for locking down the system and turning Boston into a police state.
And this is the thing. The quote-unquote government, this group of bandidos, these bandits, are the very ones who are responsible. Let's be honest with ourselves, for crying out loud. These are, look, if you blow somebody to smithereens, you kill their cousins, their aunties, their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, their sisters, and then you turn around and you talk about terrorism? Excuse me, who's the terrorist? And what do you expect people to do? What do we think they're going to do? You know, so we've got to understand who really is propping up this mad cycle of so-called terrorism. You know, our own, in quotation marks, government. We've got to understand that and stop fooling ourselves. Stop being an ostrich. Take our hands out of the blasted sand and do something while we can, because our time is running out. But we've got a little time. We've got a window of time. Let's utilize it. That's what I'm saying over and over and over again. It's happening slowly. I don't know if it's going to happen fast enough, but I do see people awakening throughout this country. And whatever differences that we have, and we will have differences, we have got to learn to evolve, work through those differences, but understand that what's at stake are our common interests. I always quote Thomas Jefferson, with whom I had some problems for sure, but he was correct when he said that every generation, talking about this country, every generation needs a new revolution.
Every generation needs a revolution. I've quoted from that quote, too, and, of course, from the Declaration of Independence. When governments don't serve the people responsibly, it's the obligation of the people to throw it out,
mm-hmm.
it out and establish a new government that will serve everybody the way a government should. That's Thomas Jefferson. That's not me. If it's good enough for him, Larry, it's good enough for me.
Right on. Right on. Right on. And it's good enough for all of us, and we can take that and tweak it. This is the 21st century. You almost start to believe that you're back in the 14th or 13th or 12th century when you look at the outrageous, just outrageous actions and statements that our so-called leaders make and take. This is not acceptable. It's simply not acceptable. It's time to clean house. Totally and completely, it's time for real systemic, I was so glad to hear you use that word, systemic change.
It is, Larry, and it's the worst, again, I've seen in my lifetime, and I dread what's coming. I'm glad I'm not young, and I really fear for young people, because most young people in this country have no futures, and if things keep going the way they are, maybe none of us will have futures. It's no idle threat. It's a real possibility, because, I mean, anything can happen ahead. Larry, we've shot through this hour. A final quick comment?
Wow, all I can say is what I've said before. All power to the people, black, white, brown, red, yellow people. Love you, my brother. Take care. Stay strong. All power to the people, to the audience listening. Remember, we are not helpless. Let's be creative and get the job done.
Absolutely. Larry, I thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to getting you back. I'll shoot you an email off air. It was a wonderful hour. It went much too fast. I wish we had a second hour.
Me too.
Thanks, Larry. Join us next week. We're on every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.